Blog Talk Radio.
Missing child alert. Hi, this is George Anthony, grandfather of missing 2-year-old Kaylee Marie Anthony. She was last seen June 16, 2008. She's 3 feet tall, has big hazel eyes and brown hair. She could be anywhere. Please help me and my family bring her home for her 3rd birthday. Any information that you provide will be completely confidential and anonymous. There will be a $225,000 reward for information that leads to the safe return of Kaylee. Press 1 now to be connected to a live representative and help us bring Kaylee home. Or for more information, visit our website at www.helpfindkaylee.com or call 1-800-423-8477.
Good evening and welcome to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and tonight we explore week 4 in the murder case of the century, the Casey Anthony trial, live from Orlando, Florida. Here is one of the reasons why we're here discussing this case.
911, what's your emergency?
I called a little bit ago, the deputy sheriff's saying I found out my granddaughter has been taken. She has been missing for a month. Her mother finally admitted that she's been missed.
Okay, what is the address that you're calling from?
We're talking about a 3-year-old little girl. My daughter finally admitted that the baby's in the store. I need to find her.
Your daughter admitted that the baby is where?
The babysitter took her a month ago that my daughter's been looking for. I told you my daughter was missing for a month. I just found her today, but I can't find my granddaughter. And she just admitted to me that she's been trying to find her herself. There's something wrong. I found my daughter's car today, and it smells like there's been a dead body in the damn car.
Okay, what is the 3-year-old's name?
Kaylee. C-A-Y-L-E-E. Anthony.
Kaylee Anthony?
Yes.
Okay, is she white, black, or Hispanic?
She's white.
How long has she been missing for?
I have not seen her since the 7th of June.
What is her date of birth?
2005. George Kane, listen.
Tonight's guests will be taking your calls with your questions. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and click tonight's show and you should see the chat room. We are honored to have criminal defense attorney Eric Dubois back with us tonight, and we welcome 2 new guests to our show, Dr. Lillian Glass, a communications and body language expert and former prosecutor and True TV's in-session correspondent, Beth Karras. We welcome all of our guests this evening. Welcome.
Good evening.
Wow. I don't know where to – every week seems like a difficult place on where to start. I guess for all of you watching this trial, it's an understatement to say fireworks have been going off in that courtroom in Orlando. Beth, let's start with you. How is it going, in your opinion, down there? Give us the latest.
Well, the latest is yesterday, Saturday in court, was not a great day for the defense because the judge found that Jose Baez had violated one of his orders by putting an expert on the stand who was going to render an opinion critical to his case, totally contrary to the defense theory that duct tape was placed over the mouth and the duct tape is the murder weapon. But that opinion hadn't been in the expert's report, so the state was caught by surprise. So the judge told the witness, get out of here, let the state depose you, talk to you after court Saturday afternoon, you come back on Monday. And then there was another witness, a forensic pathologist. And the judge gave Baez a dressing down out of the presence of the jury, but in front of all of us, about how he believed this was intentional and not inadvertent. The judge was really annoyed. But in the end, he's not going to punish Casey for her lawyer's action. He shouldn't. The testimony will probably come in tomorrow, but is just, you know, delayed. And another witness took the stand who did well on direct but not so well on cross, and that was the pathologist, Werner Spitz, who gave the opinion that the duct tape was placed on Kaylee's skull after she was decomposed and skeletonized by someone.
Now, when was the first time we actually heard that theory prior to the trial?
I was not aware of that theory, but I suspect that the prosecution must have heard it in, you know, some weeks or so ago. All these forensic depositions were toward the end in preparation for trial. But I personally had not heard that Werner Spitz was going to opine that the duct tape was placed on Kaylee's skull post-decomposition to hold the jaw in place, and then it, you know, further, you know, weathered from the elements. He doesn't, of course, know who. He doesn't say who. He just says somebody picked up the skull and the jaw, which would have been detached, put them back together, and put tape on the mouth.
So how, as an attorney and a prosecutor, both you and Eric, Beth, how would you sum up the fact that the public and the viewers of CNN's Nancy Grace heard that exact theory out of Leonard Padilla's mouth the week of December
19th, 2008? Leonard, that is news to me, that Leonard Padilla said that in December, that somebody else put tape on the skull once it was a skull.
He said it was put on post-mortem.
Well, post-mortem is okay, because a lot of people feel that it may have been post-mortem and Casey still could have done it, or someone else, post-mortem when she still has flesh all over her body to hold the decomposing fluids in her in so they're not running out and in the trunk of the car or whatever. Post-mortem is different from post-decomposition. He is, Werner Spitz said, post-decomposition, it was a skull with no flesh or tissue. That's when the tape was put on. Postmortem, that theory I have heard floated for a long time.
But wouldn't postmortem make more sense at the fact that the duct tape never had any DNA or tissue behind of Kaylee?
You know, it's a good issue. It's a good question. But there was so much going on in the woods there in terms of the flood, 6 months out in the elements. The one of the FBI technicians said that the adhesive had basically melted down to one side of the duct tape, and it was a big glob. Now, that's the side that would have had the DNA on it, and it was just a big glob at the end. And, and they weren't able to extract any out of it. It had been outside for so long.
From your opinion, how do you think the prosecution did this week on cross-examination?
Well, the prosecution did a good job with the two forensic people, an entomologist, about the bug evidence, but there's good evidence for the defense that the trunk wasn't in the body according to absence of insect activity. The defense hasn't dealt with the odor or the cadaver dogs hitting on it. There's other evidence, but they did a good job with the insect activity. The state made hay of Werner Spitz, the forensic pathologist, saying that, you know, tape was put on the skull when there was no tissue on it by some mystery person in the woods some months after Kaylee would have, you know, been dumped there. And, you know, he couldn't say there was a cause of death. That's the same as Dr. G. He couldn't say the manner of death. He doesn't agree it was necessarily a homicide. He said it could be an accident, which means that he would support an accidental drowning, and then somebody, Casey, George, whomever, puts tape on her, maybe, maybe not, but puts her in a blanket and in two bags and throws her in the woods.
Eric, as a defense attorney, how do you see the case going, the trial going this past week in reference to the defense expert witnesses and not so much of the reprimands that are being given to the defense attorney?
You know, as a defense attorney, this is your time to shine. This is your case in chief, and when you've got to start poking holes in the state's case. And right now it's going to be a battle of the experts. Who does the jury believe? Do they believe Dr. G or do they believe Warner Spitz? Or is it now this new issue of, you know, this question of why wasn't the skull cap removed? And that's what the defense has to do, is poke holes. They just have to create these questions as to why wasn't Warner Spitz allowed to attend the autopsy, the initial autopsy? Why weren't both pathologists there? To me, as a defense attorney, I would have found a better, I think it was the bug expert, the guy who was still in school when this crime occurred. I mean, if that's the best you as a defense attorney can do, you're better off not putting him on the stand. Find someone else. But he was in school when this, you know, occurred. And to me, Jeff Ashton has been able to chew some of these experts up and create and make them admit and acknowledge the state's case and confirm, you know, the state's beliefs as to what's going on. And when, as a defense attorney, the prosecutor is able to turn your witnesses against you and make them state witnesses, you've got problems.
So why do you think it is that Cheney is, you know, he obviously he has more experience than anybody on the defense team at this point. Why isn't he being utilized for his expertise and experience?
I still think he's more of a puppet master behind the scenes. I unfortunately for Casey, I think Jose Baez, it's an ego. She came to me, she hired me, I've got to do this, as opposed to, you know, stepping aside when you're maybe out of league or, you know, out being outmatched and let Cheney Mason take a role. You know, I think it was great that he handled the direct examination of Warner Spitz. I don't know if that was planned or if that was because of the dressing down Jose Baez got before. But I would not be surprised if from now to the end of this trial, you see Cheney Mason handling a lot more because of the dressing down that Baez got. I think that Judge Perry, who is a great judge and is very fair and open-minded, told him, we're going to address this issue of contempt, potential contempt, at the end of the trial, which to me meant if I was Jose Baez, I take that as if there's one more thing, you're going to go down in a blaze of fire, but I'm watching you. And don't pull the shenanigans anymore. And I think you're going to see Cheney Mason, who I think the judge has a lot more respect for and knows the way around the courtroom better, obviously. He's going to handle a lot more to potentially save Jose Baez from being found in contempt. But I still think that's an issue. If Judge Perry doesn't find him in contempt, I think he's going to be publicly reprimanded or at least something by the Florida bar for some of these blatant violations. And he created this problem on his own by playing this hide-the-ball game at the beginning. Because typically in discovery, all you have to do is provide the names of the experts. Judge Perry put in this order because the defense wasn't providing the name of its experts at the beginning. So you kind of created this problem for yourself. And now if you're not playing by the rules, as Judge Perry said, you know, you can't pick and choose which court orders you comply with. And I think you're going to see Cheney a lot more active because he knows this is going bad. And he's got a reputation that he's got to uphold for himself. I can't imagine he's going to practice law much longer. And he doesn't want this being what everyone remembers him by.
Right. I think he's doing a fairly good job myself in there. And definitely I know that the jurors must feel, you know, grateful or what have you with the kind of hospitality that he's providing and always taking them into consideration as well. But I am afraid that, you know, based on all the constant reprimands of this defense attorney, that might be a reflection to the defendant when it goes time to decide on her fate. Lillian, let me ask you a question. This week, there has been so much on, is she medicated? Why does she look so stone-faced? Did you see the look she gave to Cindy? And Beth and I were talking before the show, and I perceived some of her facial and body language a little bit differently than, you know, how the media is portraying it. What is your take on what's going on in that courtroom and how she's acting?
Well, it'd be interesting to know, how do you perceive it? Because, you know, I'm looking at it in terms of how the public is looking at it. And what I'm seeing is some very, very strange behaviors. It's inconsistent. It looks as though she's acting certain things. For example, when Werner Spitz showed a skull, it wasn't Casey's skull, Kaylee's skull, excuse me. It was just a plain skull, somebody, just a regular skull, an anatomical skull. And yet Casey had to turn away, and she just keeps turning away, and there's no emotion. And that's odd behavior, for one thing. And then we see her laughing with the pig in the blanket. Yes, it was funny. It was humorous. But it wasn't something you want to necessarily see somebody whose life is on the line laughing about. The last person you want to see laughing in that courtroom is Casey Anthony. And it's so disturbing. Then somebody must have taught her on June 17th, whether it's Jose Baez or Chaney Mason, somebody on her team or Miss Sims said to her, Casey, don't smile. Watch your P's and Q's. Watch your expression. So she came in to the courtroom really trying to hide the smile. She had a very contorted facial expression when she came in, and she pursed her lips because she made it a point not to smile. And but yet she raised her eyebrows, which gave it away when she saw Jose Baez, and she kind of looked down. It just very odd behaviors. Her reaction with Cindy was just that whole interaction was atrocious. You really see the dynamic between the two. You see the push-pull. You see how initially when Cindy got on the stand and refused to look at Casey, what it did to her. Casey fell apart. We never saw her with that real emotion. She was angry. She was violently angry. And then her mother mouths allegedly, I love you, to her. I mean, this is like a mental game. And it's very disconcerting, and it kind of gives you some sympathy towards Casey in this context.
Do you think that, and we'll get to our callers in a minute. I see that the lines are lighting up here. Do you think that, I guess this is a question for all of you, if Baez, obviously he surprised everybody with his opening statement, is it against the rule, if you will, that your attorney does something you're unaware of that he's going to do? Eric?
I think if what you're saying is, did that opening statement catch Casey Anthony by surprise?
Yeah. Could she have been mad and crying and upset in the beginning because she did not know he was going there, and it surprised the heck out of her, and she was breaking, her heart was actually breaking because she knew what this was doing to George?
I would hope to God he ran through his theory of the case with her and what his opening was going to be, and that they, and she knew, look, when I say this, this is what your reaction needs to be, or you need to be stone-faced, or you need to understand this is coming. If your client doesn't know what your opening is going to be in your theory of your case is, and your client hasn't been integrally involved in working on the defense, that's malpractice. And
well,
I
can tell you, Michelle, that, and Eric and Lillian, that she was aware. She knew that the allegation that George had molested her was going to come out. But I can't tell you how much more she participated in that opening, but she knew that allegation was going to come out.
Michelle, what you said kind of threw me back a little bit, because everybody has been looking at Casey kind of sociopathically, and here you talk about heartbreak and feelings towards George. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, I'll elaborate to an extent of some of the blogs I've read, and some of, I think Orlando Sentinel just did a story yesterday in regards to does she deserve the death sentence and all this. And when you look at some of her reactions, I know the family. So,
yeah.
And I know, and I've spoken with Casey four times with her parents on the phone at the same time. So I know the interaction that they have, and it's a love-hate relationship type of any child versus parent. But my concern is that a lot of her demeanor when her family's coming on, it almost appears that she's surprised by some of the stuff Jose is doing. And for me, when I'm listening to the judge reprimand an attorney for things he left out, which obviously any student probably would have known how to file your reports, that, you know, why is it that, you know, he switched up the opening statement after 3 years of him being out on the media circuit stating his client was 100% innocent and went with this story, and then all of a sudden his story changed. So it was like, why did this story all of a sudden change? And by her facial expressions, like the one with Cindy saying, I love you, to me, to me, her response looked like more like, you had to do what you had to do, Mom. You know, I'm hanging in there. You know, and that's the way it perceived to me, but yet public perception, except for the people in that courtroom, they perceive it every way that media sells it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think her raising the eyebrows, I perceived it as, you know, what do you want me to do? You know, I understand, you know, I'm doing the best I can. This is a tough situation. I wonder if some of her facial reactions, like Saturday when Baez was getting dressed down and she just kind of shook her head and put her head in her hands, I wonder if she's more of, instead of thinking, God, what an idiot, you know, what are you doing, more of, I can't believe this is who's representing me when I'm facing the death penalty.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Oh my God, why did I pick this person?
She's been so
especially
loyal
when
to
the
him,
prosecutor
though.
Is making comments about his texting habits. I guess he has a texting habit going on in the courtroom. And the question to me would be, oh my God, I'm facing the death sentence and my attorney keeps texting people.
Right.
You know, would a defendant, if she doesn't see it going right, would she be able to, you know, go to Cheney or go to the judge or go to somewhere? Is there an out for her? Because he is the only attorney left standing in this entire case. Does she feel stuck? I think she's
stuck. And I think right now, if she was to change horses, as they say, in midstream, I think that song sends the total wrong message to the jury. And I think right now there are people lining up for an ineffective assistance of counsel appeal. Or any of that based on some of these actions. But I think if she walked in Monday and told Judge Perry, I want Cheney Mason to be my lead attorney, I don't want to do with Mr. Baez anymore, the jury would get the wrong message from that. All of a sudden.
Right. That, it would be okay, right, Eric? I mean, it's not changing the people at the table. He could take the lead, but I agree with you that it might send the wrong message to the jury.
What message would it send? I would think it would send the right message because maybe they would be a little more lenient.
I think
they are now anyway, just because he gets chastised. But a lot of the chastising is not in front of the jury.
Right.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
And I think the message it would send is all that stuff Jose Baez said in his opening isn't true. I don't agree with it. That's why I'm changing horses midstream.
I see. Yeah.
And I would be very, very afraid of that. And I think it's part of the reason why, even if the jury comes back with first-degree murder, I don't think Judge Perry would sentence her to death. I think he'd give her a life sentence because a death sentence is an automatic appeal.
But, you know, he's done 8 for 8. When there's a death recommendation, you know, in Florida it's a recommendation, it's not binding on the judge, and you only need a simple majority. You just need 7 votes, right? And 8 out of 8, I believe, he's given death. Doesn't mean he can't go down from a death recommendation and give life, but he's pretty tough.
But I think in this case,
we have a caller on the line from the Boca area. Caller, you're on the line. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Hi, Michelle. Well, first of all, I just had a comment to make that I've been watching this trial from day one, and I have a completely different opinion than you on Casey's relationship with her parents. I see, I've watched every day that they were on the stand, and both times, or all three times, I saw nothing but contempt on her face for both her parents. In fact, her mother, the day her mother was so upset, the first time she got upset, you could read, and I even saw it in the paper, I was reading her lips right. She was furious at her mother. She's saying that bitch cried. Why did she have to cry? She hasn't cried in 3 years. And that was an awful thing to say about her mother. The poor woman, you know, you could see the condition she was in. But anyhow, and the same thing with her father. When her father was on the stand, she just looked contempt in her eyes for him. So,
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And so it kind of is interesting for me to hear what Michelle says, but then Michelle has kind of the inside scoop.
She does,
because she's spoken to Casey.
Things might have changed
had
a lot.
Experience.
You know, Michelle was with the family.
That could be.
And then my only other...
Too.
I'm sorry. My only other comment was as far as Jose's opening statement and defense of her case, I think if the jury has any common sense at all, common sense would show that if poor Kaylee Marie drowned accidentally on June 16th, as they alleged, why would she sit in jail for 3 years awaiting trial for murder? Why would she do it or her father let her do it? I mean, it's just common sense.
And that would imply that she just saw her father cover up the murder or the accidental drowning of her daughter, and then by 4 o'clock rented a video at Blockbuster with Tony Lazzaro.
Right. And not only if any of it was an accident, regardless of even if it was accidental, if your child dies accidentally, you're not going to be out partying for 30 days from day one afterwards. So the whole thing just doesn't make sense as far as, you know, it being an accident. And I just hope the jury has some common sense. And that,
I think they're probably exhausted by now.
Right. And I know.
And Beth Karras, I love watching you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Enjoy all your commentary.
Thank you.
Thanks for letting me call in, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Michelle, if I could say something.
Yes, Eric, go ahead.
I think what the caller just talked about is what I think you're going to see the state attorney's office and the prosecution say in their closing. The defense's theory doesn't make sense. Why, and it goes through all that stuff. The child drowns. Why do you wait 3 years to announce that? Why don't you report it immediately? Why don't you call 911? And I think part of the problem that the defense has is if we believe this timeline, George saw Kaylee and Casey at noon and then at 11, and then at 4 o'clock she's with Tony Lazzaro at a Blockbuster. For the defense's side, they're going to argue, how could she pull off the perfect crime in 4 hours?
Mm-hmm. Well, that timeline's a little bit – actually, she's about 7:30 at Blockbuster. Around 4, she has a flurry of calls. It's not clear that any of them are connected. They were just like 4:10, 4:11, to her mother, to her father, to Tony, and then there's no phone activity for a two-hour period between about, I think, 4:30 and 6:30, no phone activity, and then she's with Tony at about 7:30. So it was a little more than 4 hours.
Beth, does that lead you to believe that there might be some type of accident that occurred during that type of view, whether it would be a chloroform accident or something else?
Perhaps. But here's what troubles me, and you may know best, Michelle, is I don't know that the entire picture is being painted for the jury. Because when I look at the allegations here, I say, well, okay, they had this love-hate relationship. But there had to be a triggering event for Casey to move out of the house and kill her daughter, right, if you believe these allegations. What was that precipitating event? Now, Cindy says it was a loving day on Sunday, Father's Day, and she, Kaylee, and Casey sat looking and crying at pictures of her father who had just gone into hospice, and you know they were crying over him. And everything was copacetic at home. But according to a police report transcript, Jesse Grund, the ex-fiancé boyfriend of Casey, who was her boyfriend at the time she had Kaylee, Jesse Grund was told by Lee says Cindy confided in him that she and Casey had a huge fight that night and that Cindy tried to choke Casey. And you know Cindy had been, even Casey admitted it, when she finally admitted her daughter was missing that night, July 15th. Mom's been telling me that I'm an unfit mother. She throws it in my face. And Cindy's mother, Shirley Plessy, told the police, and that's in a report, that Cindy had consulted a therapist 2 months earlier and that the therapist had about what to do with Casey and not caring for Kaylee enough. And the therapist had suggested that she file for custody and put Casey out. This did not happen. She did not file for custody, but I'm speculating a little bit. Was that part of the fight? I'm going to take your child. It's like, oh, no, I'm moving out of the house. You will not have my child.
Why didn't the prosecution bring that up?
Pardon me?
That
no.
That shows reason.
Well, this is not part of the case, and the jury's never going to know it. It's in the police reports, but Cindy did not testify to it, and I don't think there are any other witnesses to it. But Cindy told Lee. Lee told Jesse Grund. Jesse Grund told the police. So it's double hearsay.
And
it's never going to come in.
Well,
yeah.
And I don't know that it's true, but it fits to me like something may have happened. It fits. Right? And the other thing that the judge kept out, and Jose Baez objected, and this was good on his part to keep it out, but the prosecution wanted in Cindy's MySpace posting from early July during that 31-day period where she says, my little angel was taken from me, and it's this long posting, and it's available. It's out there online, but the jury doesn't know it. And one of the things she says in it, she was taken away from me. Oh, why? Because of jealousy. Because, you know, Cindy was the first one to hold Kaylee when she was born. And Casey was jealous of her mother. Kaylee was very close to her grandmother. Her grandmother provided for her in every way, food, shelter, clothing, medical.
And
so
allegedly,
I don't think the whole picture is being painted, but maybe I'm wrong.
I agree. No, I agree with you. Allegedly, there was something that Shirley Plessy, Cindy's mother, said that she guessed that she loved, she hated Cindy more than she loved Kaylee. That's Casey. Hated Cindy more than she loved Casey. That's so telling. That's a slam dunk, in my view, in terms of what the whole story is.
It would explain it, right? But
yeah.
So if I were a juror, I'd be saying, wait, it doesn't quite, you know, there's something missing. And so I think that's the missing piece. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the jury, you know, comes back with something under first-degree murder, because it's just hard to put it together.
But I think they can figure it out when they see the dynamic on the stand. I mean, everybody's seeing it, and even though Michelle knows more about the relationship than the dynamic between the two, you really see it point blank in front of you what's going on, and they're not connected to each other. There's no love feeling. There's no positive energy between them, and certainly not any between George.
But I think what the state may also be counting on is after Jose Baez got up and did that opening statement, and they knew, and then the state calls George Anthony and asks him all those questions, the defense has pretty much put themselves in a position where Casey is going to have to take the stand.
I agree.
That's my question to all of you. What, you know, he surprised everybody. I think he even surprised Ashton because he was sitting there shaking his head too. And I really thought, wow, that was a great opening statement despite the dynamics of it. But the way he was doing his opening statement, I thought that was what was yet to come, you know, and obviously that wasn't the case. But with that type of an opening statement and knowing now you have just shown the jury your client has lied for 3 years, why would you go and take more people down with this case when you can't defend that? Unless you use Casey, which no one believes.
Well, I think that's the problem the defense has had this whole trial. They've shown their hand. They tipped their hand in the opening statement, which to me was more of a closing argument than an opening statement. But they showed their hand. They told the state, here's what we think happened. Here's what we're going to do. So what's the state do? They called George Anthony first, which completely threw this defense off, I think. And the first question is, you know, or second or third question is, did you molest your daughter? Did your granddaughter drown in the pool?
And I don't think he was going to be the first witness, because Ashton took him out in the hall to prepare him during Baez's opening.
Yeah. I don't think he was going to be the first witness at all.
Right.
It's one of the things that's very interesting to note is when he did say, did you molest Casey? And he looks down for a moment and then looks up. You know, who knows whether he did or he didn't, or what the definition of molest is, or if it did or didn't happen. Yes, she's lied in the past, but is she lying about this? Who knows? One of the things that may go through the jury's mind is, well, she's so messed up. Maybe something happened to her at the end, in her early life. Maybe he did molest her. I don't think George comes across that well, personally.
No, and I
do
think...
Do you think that if George... Do you think that if this was not true whatsoever in regards to him abusing her, how is the defense going to show that she's a scorned child of an abuser when they didn't even enter into an insanity defense?
I think you got to put her on the stand.
Yeah, you do,
yeah.
Because you have to put her on the stand. Well, go ahead.
Because
Eric.
You're claiming she's been abused sexually by not only her brother but her father, and that is why she kept quiet for 3 years and lied to everybody. That to me shows that you're saying her mind is not all there, which is an insanity offense, which they did not go with.
Or it's not necessarily that her mind's not there, or there is something. You know, a lot of people may think that maybe something happened to her to cause her to be stealing people's checks, to be having this aberrant behavior. What is going on? Is she acting out? We know so much about molestation and child abuse just from watching television at this point, and what happens to people, you know, from all these different talk shows. So when you see something like that, it really kind of makes sense to a lot of people. Maybe something did happen to him. And that little pause, that little, you know, as I said, I look at things from a body language perspective. And when he kind of looked down, it was like, whoa. Because if somebody said to you, any three of us, did you ever molest that? You look right at the jury and you say, absolutely not, with anger. You don't look down and look up. It's just, something's off. I'm just saying, you know. Just doesn't feel right to me.
We have another caller on the line from 540. Caller, you're on the line. Do you have a question for the panel?
Yes, I do.
Yes, ma'am.
I was wondering why Jose Baez didn't wait to give his opening statement until his case came in chief, to kind of find out what the prosecution was going to say.
Well,
I think he could have avoided a lot of this, having to prove this by putting her on the stand, if he had waited and changed his opening statement.
Procedurally, how it works and is the prosecution gives their opening, defense for the evidence, before any evidence is taken or admitted, you know, testimony is taken. The prosecution gives their opening, then the defense has an opportunity to give an opening, and then if they do, then the prosecution has an opportunity to make a rebuttal. What he could have done was, after the prosecution made their opening, was say the defense waives an opening and proceed right to testimony.
Right.
But you can't, after the prosecution rested last week, he couldn't then give his opening to the jury, because the opening then is, by definition, at the opening of the trial.
Correct.
But he could have deferred it. He could have deferred it until the end of the – I mean, they do allow that in Florida. They allow a deferral to the close of the prosecution's case, and then they, because I did see that in Jim Leyritz's case in Fort Lauderdale late last year that I covered. They do allow that here, And so I think that's what the caller is talking about. He could have waited till the close of the evidence. But
exactly.
But he planted some seeds. I mean, he may not be able to deliver on all the facts, but he planted some seeds about sexual abuse that may resonate with some jurors, even if he can't deliver one juror, you know? And then, of
does
course,
he have
it's
to deliver
a compromised verdict or a new trial.
Does he have to cover everything that he claimed to have happened? Does he have to address that?
He does have to address it. It doesn't have to be necessarily believable evidence, but, I mean, Casey may not be the most credible person, but if she got on the stand and said the things he said in his opening about the scenario at the pool, and I came running around the garage, and I saw my father holding my daughter dripping wet, dead in his arms, and he yelled at me, "Now look what you've done. What is your mother going to do?" Yeah, you know, the jury may not believe it, but he's delivered on his opening. Now, if he doesn't do that, the prosecution can stand up in closing and say, "You were told the evidence would show you this, and it didn't. And I submit to you, it's because it's not true," or whatever they're going to say. They can comment on it because he made such specific promises in his opening. He didn't have to go so far. He could have said it was an accident, and you'll hear, or something like that. And then, you know, Warner Spitz says, "I can't rule out accident. There's no cause of death." You know, then it's a lower threshold, but he's raised the bar.
Did that answer your question, ma'am?
It did. I have another quick one, too.
Okay.
Actually, two other ones. One of them,
okay.
I know Florida has the Sunshine State. Did the judge not allow the faces of the jurors to be seen during this specific trial?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And we actually opt not to do it when we are running the cameras, my network, which used to be Court TV, now In Session, on True
love.
TV. And we used to, in the early days, we did.
Right.
You know, like
yes.
William Kennedy Smith's trial, a couple of trials. But the judges don't really want us to. And so we don't if they ask us not to. It's discretionary with the judge.
And my third question is that are they allowed to watch coverage, are the lawyers allowed to watch the coverage? Like, I am so obsessed that I record it and then watch it, the live streaming, and then go back and listen to what you guys say on In Session. And are they, like I think it was Vinnie Paulson picked up that during one of the phone conversations that Casey had with her parents, she said, "You were a good grandfather," like picked up that it was "were" past tense.
Yeah.
So can
right.
the attorneys go
right.
and listen to that stuff and then use it? Like, can they watch
please. Yeah, over the years, absolutely. Lawyers have gotten more ideas from commentary from our guest lawyers like Eric and not even lawyers, just anybody. Lillian
right.
can come on, anybody can and have ideas, and lawyers will pick up on it, and I see it used in the courtroom. It's permissible.
But they
and it's
can
done.
They watch it as it's going on right now? Like,
well, I noticed it with Casey's dress because initially I did a bunch of blogs where I thought she should be wearing black to show mourning. And then sure enough, Casey showed up with black. But now they're back to pastels.
That's
right.
funny. But it
and
is absolutely permissible.
The sweater when she had to stand up for her mom to say, "No, she doesn't look like she's pregnant now." I thought that was horrible. Absolutely horrible.
And some people wonder if they knew that was going to happen that day because she was wearing a tight-fitting sweater, so that would show her flat stomach. I think it was coincidental, but
oh, you do?
She was wearing something that would show she had a flat stomach.
I think it was.
Yeah, she was. She was. Thank you, caller.
Sure.
I do have an email that has come in regards to George looking down. I don't know, Lillian. What do you think about the fact that he did have the Bible on his lap and Kaylee's photo? Would that explain him looking down for strength?
I don't think so. I don't think you need strength if somebody's accusing you. You look right at the jury and you say,
right.
Absolutely not. If I accused any three of us or any three of you on the phone of something, you'd say no. Your pitch would go up. Your anger level would go up. You would say that. I mean, this is such a serious allegation. And it makes me question. If I was a juror, I would think, maybe, possibly. Kind of explains a lot.
So
well,
let's explore the prosecutor, Ashton, this week. How did you all think about his demeanor towards the two witnesses, the bug doctor, Dr. Huntington and Spitz, in regards to it, it's almost as he first he declared them, yes, they are definitely experts, no question about it, and then by the end he's basically accusing them of lying for the defense in so many words. What do you make of it?
Well, there's no question that Jeff Ashton is passionate about his work. In science, the forensics, that's his field. He's the first one to use DNA evidence in a courtroom in the United States, and now the first one to use odor and decomposition in the United States in a criminal case. And so he has this righteous indignation when he feels that an expert, a scientist, just doesn't have it right. And he's got a temper, and some people thought that he was bullying Timothy Huntington, the forensic entomologist. He was a little hard on him.
The student.
Werner Spitz, you can be hard on him. He's been around forever and is used to testifying and was not as prepared, one could argue, because he simply couldn't talk, couldn't discuss the case. I mean, he just didn't know the facts.
Right. Anyone else want to weigh in?
Yeah, I don't think he comes across very well to a lot of people. I think he comes across very arrogant at times. I think he comes across with a lot of hostility, as opposed to Linda Drane Burdick. I mean, she comes across very level-headed, very much in control, and it may be off-putting to some jurors.
Interesting. Go ahead, Eric.
I thought he did a good job with, poking enough holes and making the jury question whether or not these defense experts were just paid to elicit, we need this testimony, so we're going to pay you, go on the stand and say this. And, with Werner Spitz, I think he did a good job of breaking down some of these, have you been involved in this too long that you're not current on all the recent trends and what's going on? But, the problem that he has is, here's a guy that's been doing pathology for 56 years.
Right.
The first bug guy, I said it, at the beginning of the show, if that's the best you've got is a guy who's, been out of school for 2 years, you're going to have issues with a trained prosecutor. He's going to jump all over that.
Do you think that having both of them on, but they're both very well credentialed and qualified to give their expert opinions, do you really think, or have you seen in a courtroom where defense or prosecution witnesses basically lie or stretch the truth or perjure themselves in order to back the person that paid them? I mean, that's hard for me to understand how a young guy going into the business is going to want that on his record, and a guy that's been in it for 50 years would hang his reputation out to dry.
Well Timothy Huntington, the bug guy, he ultimately was kind of neutralized because he said there wasn't much in Neil Haskell's report, that's the state's insect guy, that he disagreed with. He basically agreed the body was where it was in the woods for 6 months or so. And that took Roy Kronk and that whole theory of the meter reader possessing the body and placing it there at some later time out of the case. And that is another thing Baez said in his opening, that Roy Kronk was greedy and wanted the reward money, which he didn't get, and that he had possession of the body. He didn't describe how he had possession. Did he move it move it 50 feet within the woods, or did he put the skeleton in his vehicle and carry it around and bring it back? I mean, he doesn't explain what he meant by possessing the body and then put it where it was found. But Timothy Huntington agrees that it was where it was for 6 months. So he didn't hurt. So he's not a hired gun who's going to say whatever the defense wanted. He just didn't think the body was in the trunk for a couple of days. That's all. And there was evidence to support his position.
For the callers, anybody that would like to ask our panel questions, the call-in number is 347-838-8622. We have a caller from the 415 area code. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yes. My name is Claudia Miles, and I'm a psychotherapist. I wanted to I had a couple of questions, but I felt that Jose Baez really blew it by bringing in all these things, all these ideas from Ray Kronk to George's involvement, that he then put himself in a position to have to prove. It seemed to me that the circumstantial case, in terms of the prosecution, in other words, the 31 days for behavior, et cetera, that was their case. But what he needed to do was simply go on reasonable doubt. And since you've got a single hair in the trunk without any fluids or et cetera, which you'd expect with a body in there for 2 to 3 days, it's not so much whether Decomp is in there. She was without the car for several days. It's whether Kaylee was in the trunk. It's whether the body would have been tampered with, not necessarily moved by Ray, maybe tampered with as ghoulish people may want to do. But I thought Jose set himself up for a huge fall by trying to challenge what really couldn't be challenged. And also because George, I think, is very sympathetic. And as a therapist, I believe George's behavior in the jailhouse video with his wife, watching the two of them together and their body language, and even looking down. When people lie, they tend to look up, not down. So I felt that he looked down out of having
disgust.
Yes, out of that it's come to this, that he actually has to deny molesting his daughter at the beginning of this horrific trial. And further, Casey had told this big secret to her boyfriend that her brother had tried to molest her, that I'm not even sure I believe. Why, this is a girl who wants attention, why hold back and tell that when she would have a much bigger story to tell if it was her dad and she was looking for sympathy?
Well, you know, too, you know, as a therapist, you know that certain things are revealed and certain things are not revealed. To get back to the body language, no, it is one of the tells that people will look down or up. It doesn't matter which you do in terms of deception. That's not to say he was deceiving. It's just that it may be perceived that way by some jurors. I mean, that is a very strong statement that is in people's minds.
He also looked down when he was asked about covering up the murder, or the accident. He also looked down, and for that question, he had the very same body language, and I think they did believe him on that, and I think all the videos showing him sort of trying to get the information from Casey makes it clear that he didn't know that his granddaughter was dead. So he looked down exactly the same way in that second question.
Well, not exactly. He paused and looked down in the first one. It was not exact, because I did look at that quite extensively.
But you did see that he looked down in that question also. Okay.
The only people that really know if he molested, if there was any molestation, is he and Casey.
Sure, unless the brother saw something.
Which brings me to the thank you, caller, for your call. Claudia Miles, you said, right?
Yes.
We'll look you up. I'd love to have you, Lillian Glass, and Dr. Dale Archer on the same show.
I think
it would be a hoot.
Well, thank you for saying that. I will add that I also disagreed with the psychotherapist on in session as to the diagnosis. I would lean much more toward narcissistic personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder. And also, I just have to say that people, to think that trauma is what causes these personality disorders, that's definitely not always the case. I mean, many times abandonment or perceived abandonment, as in the Jeffrey Dahmer case, is what causes this type of behavior. And in her case, it was seemed to me so clear in the jailhouse video and also the other behaviors when she said, "All you care about is, you know, Kaylee and not me," when obviously even then she knew Kaylee was dead and she was throwing a tantrum that mommy and daddy weren't more concerned about her. So I really saw her as someone who had, out of narcissistic rage, wanted to get rid of what was taking the attention off of her.
Interesting. Thank you again, Claudia. We'll look you up.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is interesting because, you know, what I can't get my head around is the fact that from July I had been working with them on the website, all the internet stuff, and my conversations with her, she gave input on what to do on the website. So to me, it seemed as if this girl knew her daughter was missing and she was looking for her. But I'm 100% in my mind certain that George and Cindy by no means knew that Kaylee was deceased until they found out she was deceased. Is that your opinion on our panel?
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good evidence to support what you're saying, too. Yeah,
I mean, saying Cindy, that the duct tape
never
matches what he was hanging, I can tell you we went to the store and bought duct tape. We got duct tape from, you know, the search crews that came out and helped. We got duct tape from this one and that. So to say that, oh, George is hanging up with the same duct tape that he wrapped his granddaughter with, the people saying that need as much help as Casey. That's my opinion, of course, and I'm not an expert.
I don't think George and Cindy had anything to do with it. The one person who I've always been suspicious of is Lee, the brother. They were
interesting.
You know, Casey and he seemed very close, and you know, living in Orlando and following the case since it happened in 2008, he disappeared. He fell after the memorial service. He fell off the face of the earth pretty much until this trial.
But maybe
what
he did
you,
it because
what do you
he
all
felt-
make of the fact that he fought the DNA test or the paternity test so much, you know, at that point. But if police thought George had any doing in this, why didn't they test him too?
I think they did. Didn't they?
They did. Yeah.
Why hasn't that been such a big factor in the trial and pretrial as much as Lee has been? If the whole focus is about George, why focus on Lee with those questions while he's on stand?
I think Lee's behavior has been odd with the high-fiving. You wondered if they were in cahoots with each other. What was going on between them? Did he do anything with? Did he help her move the body? Here's something that's very annoying. There's something on YouTube where Cindy talks about the woods, and there was no even mention of a woods. The woods didn't even come up then, and she tells that to Sergeant Allen. She also tells him that she knows Casey got help moving that body. She didn't do it alone, or she got help moving something. She had to have help. That's very odd to me.
And my understanding is Lee has immunity from the state for something.
Why would he have immunity?
Exactly.
Can you answer that? Yeah, why as an attorney? Why would he? Could you answer why this man has immunity? I mean, something's very odd to me.
I know that we're getting on the hour here, and I know that it's Father's Day, so I appreciate, Eric, you being with us. But if you all could stay on for a few more minutes, we have a whole switchboard lit up. So, but I don't want to take you away from your families and sleep because I know the trial starts again tomorrow. Are you all okay with that?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay.
I can stay a few more minutes.
Okay. We have a caller from, I don't want to disconnect, caller from the 954 area code. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question for the psychologist. I just want to know, as far as George Anthony goes, in any of your cases that you've handled, when do you see a 22-year-old that's been living in a house where her father's been sexually abusing her since 8 years old, and she continues to live there as an adult and bring a baby there?
He may not have been abusing her all the time. Maybe he did it when she was younger, or maybe he didn't. Who knows?
Well, I mean, if that was true,
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And if it was true, why would she leave her little daughter with him?
That's right.
If this did
that's
happen
right.
when she was younger. No, that is a very good point. That is
no,
a very
I don't,
good point.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it for a minute. And that's all I have to say about that. Thanks.
Thank you for calling. We have a caller from the 502 area code. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yes. Do you all not think that she tries to blame all the men in her life as, like, trying to abuse her and whatever, that after this is over and if she's convicted or whatever, she'll stab back at Baez and all the time behind closed doors with him?
I thought of that. I thought of that especially, too, with Chaney Mason. I mean, when you really look at their interaction, he does a lot of touching of Kaylee.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's documented. And putting his fingers on her arm and rubbing it, you know, that, So you wonder if that will come back to haunt him.
Exactly.
Didn't Jose get reprimanded for that and almost get debarred for that in, like, a couple years ago?
There were rumors about issues at the jailhouse that they shared a piece of liquor through the glass, which is...
Oh, Lord.
I doubt
remember
that.
All those times behind closed doors when this first happened?
Right.
That she was with him one-on-one?
Making cookies at his office, quote-unquote, is what I think one report was. And,
where was his
you know,
staff?
Exactly.
He didn't have a staff then.
Oh, I got it. Did that answer your question, ma'am?
Yes, ma'am, and I want to say hey to Dr. Glass for putting up with me on her Facebook page.
Oh, you're a sweetheart.
Susie Baker.
I love you.
Thank you.
Susie. Yay.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And there's a comment from somebody by the name of You in the chat room that, Beth Karras, you have beautiful eyes.
Oh, thank you.
Caller, you're on the air from the 415 area code. Do you have a question? Uh-huh.
Oh, I was just going to say that with a narcissistic personality disorder of the type that she has, I think that male attention is something that validates her existence. And so, and narcissistic people or narcissistic personality disordered people tend to imagine things like everybody wants them. Everybody sexually desires them. Everybody envies them.
Well,
so I doubt
in Casey's
that
case,
now.
A lot of people did want her. I mean, this girl had quite a few boyfriends, and it was very.
I meant in terms of her, her lawyer and her brother and her father.
Oh, at this point, you never know.
And don't forget about all the police officers she dated that got
Oh yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Thank you, caller. Beth, what's it like? I've seen some of the photos that you've posted, and Rosie is good at posting photos, too. What's it been like down there? It looks like definitely the biggest media event ever to take place in Orlando. What's it like down there with everybody?
It's one of the bigger ones that I've covered, but I've been at, you know, Kobe Bryant and OJ in the beginning, not the murder case, but the Las Vegas case was big in the beginning, during the trial. Other big one, and some of the Anna Nicole, John Mark Carr stuff, which are flash in the pan stories, not trials, but still a huge media presence. But for a trial, this is one of the absolute biggest that I have covered, and it is really at the level of, I think, O.J. Simpson's murder case. Even though Casey's not a celebrity, the difference is social media has really raised the profile, and there are so many sources to get information from. Everybody's connected at all times, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, some sort of blog, online streaming of the trial. Reading it in a newspaper. I mean, you just get your information everywhere. So it's a very different experience for me, and I have been covering trials for 17 years. So I have a lot, you know, to draw on, and this is really unique. We have a great compound on an empty lot directly across the street from the courthouse. We've been able to you know, rent the space from a private owner, and a lot of outlets are there, but we're only using a fraction of the space that's available. And we have, my network, InSession and HLN and CNN, we're all using the facility, have built this set, really a studio, and everybody had to raise their platforms because there's this fence, you know, that surrounds the lot, and we can't see the courthouse if we just stand on the ground and do our live shots. So we have this, we're up at least a story, and everything is raised, these raised platforms. So when you see us on the air with the courthouse behind us, know that we're at least a story above ground so we can be above that fence. In any event, what I found surprising is that the deputies, the Orlando police, whoever was in charge of it, did not control those lines of people lining up tickets until the third week. It was crazy that it was the breaking out into fights. They needed the system they have now, which is you line up the afternoon of the day before for the next day's tickets. No more fights.
It's amazing that Jane Velez constantly is making comments about the guy with the neck brace. You know, it is amazing. He gets in every time. How's that happening?
I just talked to him the other day. I met him for the first time because he came over to the set on Friday. And I said, what are you doing running? Because we have video of him running. I said, you're putting a neck brace on. He said, I know. He just got caught up in the moment, you know. And I he's out of work right now, but I don't think he's on workman's comp because I said, I hope nobody's watching
you.
I
hope not.
You're collecting money somewhere for being home with a neck brace on. But he's
Lillian, what do you make of it? Oh, I'm sorry, Beth.
I think the whole thing has touched the world. It's touched the world because it's about mothers, it's about children, it's about parental relationships, it's about lying, and one of the things that people find the most toxic is lying, and it brings out a lot of animus and hatred when people lie. So there's so many elements. This is kind of the modern day reality story. I mean, reality show. This is kind of the ultimate. What's going to happen today? Oh, the lawyer got dressed down. You couldn't write this script for a reality show. So this is the ultimate reality show that people are watching and wanting to see. And in a way, it's kind of like, what will happen? It makes you really wonder about your own philosophies. Do I believe in the death sentence or do I not? Or, oh my gosh, what? It challenges people's morality.
It's a mystery. How did she do it? Did she do it? Where did she do it?
Exactly.
Why did she do it? When did she do it?
So that brings me back to OJ. Okay, OJ, let's face it, I think 98% of the American people believe he was guilty based on forensics, based on evidence, based on character, based on stuff that happened in their marriage and all the restraining orders and the phone calls and all. There was evidence to show that, and so he didn't take his Advil the night before he put on the glove, and it didn't fit, so they acquit. Casey Anthony, there is none of that. You know, you've got your own prosecution up there with their witnesses, and every one of them said she was a good mother. There was nothing. So are we to assume that she just snapped after that fight on the 15th, and on the 16th she murders her kid and then goes and watches a blockbuster movie? And better yet, if she murdered her or it was an accident, why is it so imperative to this defense lawyer to have her day in court? And I use that loosely because it almost appears like it was his day in court.
Yeah, it does look like that.
You know how much money was spent just to cover? If you're going to blame somebody for covering something up, this defense team needs to be ashamed of themselves if this is their story and they're sticking to it. Because this has cost a lot of money, time, and energy. Many of us that got involved for all the right reasons to help bring home a missing child. You know, so many people lost so much in 3 years on this case. And if it all comes down to it was an accidental death and she was scared, I can't, you know,
Beth,
I think her attorney should be prosecuted.
Beth, I wanted to ask you, how is Jose perceived by the media?
Good question.
Well, I'll tell you, the media in Orlando, who have been, you know, they really own the story here in Orlando and have lived with it for so long, are really hard on him. They are, I mean, the headlines are bad. I mean, they're just bad. They do not get along with him. And the national media is perhaps a little more forgiving and less biased. But I must say that they're, you know, he's not happy with the local media.
And
he is perceived as being an inexperienced attorney. Now, he's tried cases. It's not his first trial. But he's been licensed since 2005. So you talk about his bug guy being 3 years out of school. That's what Jose was when he got this case, 3 years licensed. Not out of school, but licensed. And he was not qualified to handle a capital case. You have to have two lawyers, and you have to have somebody who is, death penalty qualified, and that is Chaney Mason. But he's had a couple others, and Fennell, who was his mitigation, his capital person, helped pick the jury. She'll come back if there is another penalty phase. So he's had a lot of help. I don't know what it's like when the lawyers have their meetings, if he listens to them.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Why is Ms. Sims not there? Wasn't she supposed to be hired to do some technical analysis of the experts?
Sure.
What happened to her?
Yes, and Chaney as well. All I know is they divided the witnesses, and it just so happens that the way they got divided some time ago, the ones being called are Jose's. But I don't really know anything more than that. She's only done one witness, I think, and Chaney's done about four or five.
And I wasn't too impressed with her approach either. Is she experienced?
Yeah, I think she is. Yes, and a science person. Anne Fennell is great, though.
I have to admit, Ashton and Linda there, they definitely know how to work a courtroom. There's no doubt about that. And I think if that was the same way going on the defense, I think this trial would be going in a much different direction and more like a hung jury in the outcome. I don't see that happening, though, now.
Michelle, if I could just touch on, you asked Beth about the Orlando media and how the setup is and all that. And I think that's part of what is motivating Judge Perry, because before this trial started, he said, this case is bigger than OJ because of Twitter and Facebook and all the social media and the internet. I mean, I sit in my office and listen to it on the internet while I'm working. And I know a lot of people that do that. There's a big jumbotron in downtown Orlando that shows it on TV. There's bars and stuff that are constantly running the feeds. All the local news media have put it on from 9 until 5 every day and moved all the regular network broadcasts. But this is an opportunity, and I think what Judge Perry is saying is this is an opportunity for Central Florida and Florida to show off its lawyers and its legal profession and how things are done here, because we saw the circus that was the O.J. Simpson trial and all of that, and he didn't want that. And I think that's what part of his concern is with setting up areas outside the courtroom, outside the courthouse for protesters, which are empty. There is no one downtown protesting.
Yeah, that's right.
Supporting. There's nothing. And I think he wants this to be, look, we know how to do it in Orlando, and he's not going to allow the shenanigans and these games to be played. And he knows that the world is watching this trial, and the world is watching this case. And, you know, honestly, Florida's judiciary and the legal system is under attack by the budget system that we have, the budget crisis we're having in Florida. The judiciary branch is always getting its budgets cut, the clerk of courts and all that. And I think this is his way of showing, look, you know, we can do a proper trial, we can do things right, but we need everyone to be on board. And I think, you know, the prosecution, the way they walk about the courtroom and they handle themselves, that's because they have the experience. And I think that's what is frustrating Judge Perry. All these sidebars, we see all this kicking the jury out, bringing them back in. It's cost, and this is a multi-million dollar trial in terms of costs and expenses for the taxpayers, which is already strapped. There was fear that this was going to bankrupt the Orange County Judiciary's budget and the Clerk of Court's budget because of the cost of this trial.
And well, I can say it from Lily and I, out on the West Coast, I don't know about you, Lillian, but I am up at 6 a.m. every morning, which is not a normal
time for me to wake up. But I watch it because if I TiVo it, then it's like, okay, now I can't stay in constant contact with people asking me questions. So
No, I'm the same way. I'm absolutely.
And I'm tired of the commercials.
Yes, I can't stand those commercials.
You know, they leave you hanging, at least on the weekend.
No,
leave you hanging, they come back and you haven't missed anything.
Exactly.
On the weekdays, it's not the same way. And we flip back and forth from in-session to HLN, you know. So kudos to our friends over at Turner and such, doing a great job over there. Where do you think the case is going starting tomorrow? Do you think we'll be done by Friday as the judge thought we would be?
Well, the judge is a little, he wants the lawyers to hurry along because he told the jurors that they were going to get the case to deliberate by the 25th or 27th. So that's, what, Saturday or next Monday. And it's going a little more slowly because he said one witness a day. It was taking, you know, one whole day to do the bug guy. And then Saturday was basically one witness since he interrupted the Rodriguez and said to come back on Monday. So one witness each of the last 2 days is not going to get them to summations by, say, Thursday or Friday. There's going to be at least a full day of summations, maybe even a day and a half, I would think, or at least one day, a half a day each side. So I don't know. I think it's going to go into next week, and that jury will get the case a little bit later than the judge thought at this point.
Mm.
And I was very surprised that Judge Perry told the jury, you'll probably have this case by X date. Because that kind of puts the jury on notice that, well, the state took 3 weeks. Why is it only going to take the defense a week? And if it runs over, who are they going to blame?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a defense case. Well, something obviously happened or whatever. And I think that was a mistake by Judge Perry
I was kind of surprised by that too, because it almost appeared that okay, it took 18 days for the prosecution to do their case. You're only going to need to hear from the defense for a few days at the most. You know, it's almost implying that there is no defense, and that kind of startled me too.
Michelle, I want to ask you a question about Cindy and George. If, let's say, she is found to have the ultimate sanction, as Judge Perry says, how do you think they will react to it? Do you think they're starting to mourn Casey at this point, or what do you think is going on with them?
Well, of course, I'm not speaking on behalf of them.
No.
But in my opinion, as a friend of theirs, I think they have prepared themselves just as if they did with Kaylee and finding Kaylee. So I think they're prepared for what's going to happen. But as we know, even if that's the case, it's not going to be happening right after the trial is over. You know, so there'll be a lot of appeals, I'm sure, especially the way that the defense is going. I would surmise, but I'm not a legal expert. But that's what I think in regards to that. There is a question I want to make sure I ask all of you, because they've posted it 5 times, regarding Linda Kenny Bodden. Dr. Huffington was associated with the case via a phone call from Bodden on December 11th, the same day the remains were found. But they weren't identified until December 19th. What do you make of all of these experts being called on the 11th prior to knowing that this was Kaylee?
Well, I know a lot of people are speculating that Casey must have said, yes, that's it, and confirmed it. But you know what? I was here when that happened. I was in Orlando. There had been a hearing that day, December 11th, and I had just finished a live shot. I was having a cup of espresso with the NBC News reporter, correspondent Carrie Sanders, when I looked up on the TV monitor, that little Italian restaurant near the courthouse, and I saw there's this breaking news that, you know, remains were found, and we bolted out to our live shots and we started working the phones. And because the early reports were consistent with a small child's skull. They couldn't tell the sex, but they just said a small child's skull, and it's like a quarter mile from the Anthony home. We're like, oh, man. And so everybody was putting it together because there was just such an electricity in the air. Everyone thought, oh, my God, this is it. And so the defense, they were going to get ready. They were going to be ready just in case. So I don't really don't make a big deal out of it. Linda Kenny-Bodden knows her stuff. She's, like, married to the, you know, top dog in forensic pathology right now, right, Michael Bodden. And so she knew to just get somebody fast just in case.
What do you make of all the attorneys that have come and gone from this case, whether representing Lee, George, Cindy, Casey? There's been some top-notch attorneys and some local attorneys that have come on the case and just walked away, and the next one came in. What's up with that?
Well, in my opinion, it's a combination of ego and no money. Sometimes it's ego gets in the way, or sometimes it's a conflict of interest, Brad Conway getting off the case, but also there's no money. People who, you know, wanted to defend her, just they need to pay their mortgages and put the kids through school too. And they
What was the conflict of interest with Conway?
Wasn't it it was when Mark, it was something to do with Mark Nijame and Texas EquiSearch.
Oh,
there were
okay.
allegations that he got off because of, I think he had reviewed the documents, and I don't know, there was some problem with that. I can't remember the details, but it wasn't anything major. But he stepped aside, thinking it was, you know, the better practice.
I think it's about money. You know, a lot of these attorneys were asked to do the yeoman's job for 3 years with no compensation. But Lee Anthony asked the court to sit in the courtroom, and Beth, I haven't seen him.
Yeah, he hasn't been.
Yes,
there.
This is right. You're right.
Why do you think that is?
I haven't seen him either, except the days when he was there, he had to testify.
Right. So, I mean, if you're going to waste the court's time and ask to be there, and you have this attorney do all that, and you're given the permission to be there as next of kin as a victim, why aren't you sitting in court?
Right.
Lillian, what do you make of that?
Well, maybe he had a changed heart about his sister. You know, that could be it, too. And, you know, one of the things that's very disturbing, too, is to watch Cindy writing and writing and writing. She didn't write for 3 years, and now she's writing. And one thinks she's writing a book or something. And you wonder, did Lee want to be in court because maybe he wanted to write a book to get some compensation for not having any money? But one of the things, too, with regard to Jose Baez, even though he hasn't, you know, gotten a lot of compensation, I think he's going to have a big payday when this is over, media-wise. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody hires him as a correspondent or something, because he's very, whatever you think about him in the courtroom, he handles himself beautifully in front of a camera. He's very articulate and calm and in control. He looks good from a point of view of being dressed well. So I think somebody will hire him big time in the media.
Interesting.
He is a very nice person, you know.
Yeah, he's very nice. I have to give him credit. You know, there might not be any money there right now or whatever the case may be, but there's, maybe it's the ego thing that you all are talking about, but he's still there. And he's the only one out of all attorneys that is. So,
right.
Would I have him defending my life? I don't know if I would at this point, but he definitely, he's still there, and he either really does care to win this case or I don't know. It just appears like they're doing their case every day, preparing for it every day instead of knowing where they were going before they started it.
Eric, can I ask you a question? Can a person change their opening, like, during the course of the trial or, like, towards their closing? Can they say, I don't know, can they fix it, so to speak?
Like with new evidence?
Just stuck with what you say?
I've never seen a second opening statement be given. I think, you know, and I surmise this, and I think I talked about it last week, was, you know, maybe he gets up in his closing and says, you know, I was lied to also. I told you all that stuff in the opening based on what she told me, and as you heard on the tape,
yes.
She's lied to me too. But that doesn't make her a killer. She's a liar.
You know, it's interesting the way you say that, because one of the things I really did believe was she did lie to Jose and tell him that there really was a Zanny, because he was so concerned about this Zanny, and he came across very credible when he spoke. So I really...
If she's going to lie to her attorney, and maybe he gets up and says that. Look, I was duped as well. But now we got to look at the evidence, and the evidence doesn't lead to first-degree murder.
Right.
Exactly. Good. Well, we're coming down to the last few minutes of the show. I appreciate you all staying on a little longer. Thank you so much. Last thoughts, Dr. Glass?
Well, it's just going to be interesting. I wanted to say that it is so stressful to watch this for a lot of people. I think this, you know, it's not an enjoyable experience, because I think it's bringing out a lot of people, a lot of hostility, and you're seeing it in the blogs, you're seeing it in a lot of areas. So I hope it's over soon so people can get back to their normal lives and not have that much hatred and stress going on with them.
Definitely. And we've had Dr. Archer on a couple times, too. And I know that we've talked about that quite a bit, about what this is doing to everybody.
I did not see this coming, the popularity of this case. And I did an interview yesterday where I was asked if it was as big as OJ. And I said, and I'd say it again, 2 months ago, I would have told you no. No way. 2 months ago and since the beginning of the case. But now that I've been here in Orlando for about 5 weeks during jury selection as well, but I was in Orlando, not Clearwater, and I've just watched it build more and more. And everybody was aware of the case, but it really snowballed. And I just didn't foresee this. And I'm fascinated by watching it grow and how involved people are. I don't know what that says about us. Is it because we're in a tough time and our economy is tough and unemployment is high and people just need a diversion?
Can't be that tough. There's people that have flown in and have stayed for 5 weeks now there. So definitely.
Not the economy for them.
Yeah, definitely helping Orlando, I'm sure. It definitely is a surprise, but it's definitely also a great tool. I remember taking a government class in college during, I think it was the trying to impeach President Clinton. And boy, did we, you know, that was a perfect time to take that class, because we had so much to watch and see in order to get the big grasp at what happens in Washington, D.C. So here, watching this trial and seeing how things go, I think it's a great learning lesson for students and college students alike.
Yeah. And I think this week is going to be, you know, last week for the defense was all these experts and bug doctors. And this week we're going to get into the Roy Kronk. They're going to have to call George and Cindy probably back. They're going to have to call Lee back. A lot of these friends that were called. I think this week is going to be more riveting. Is going to be a hold on to your seats, because God knows where this is going.
And I also want to say, I just want to say one thing. As you hold on to your seats, look at the body language, because that will tell you the real story.
But what are we looking for, Lillian? What are we looking for?
Oh, you're looking for signals of deception. You're looking for shoulders. So read my blog. I'll tell you. I decipher it every day, www.drlillianglassblog. And what I do is I will decipher it for you, what's really going on. Look for shoulder shrugs. Look for pause times. Look for stuttering on words, stammering. Look for a lot of blinking, just from a deception point of view. And look at the relationship with Casey and her family members. Watch Casey, because Casey tells all.
It seems like with her attorney, she has the family she's always wanted, between the lady attorney that hugs her and holds on to her, to Cheney, the dad figure, to Jose, the brother figure, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow. That's very fascinating. Wow. Good for you. Never thought of that. Except I don't think Cheney's too grandfatherly when he keeps pawing her all the time.
So I don't know about that.
Tomorrow night, we're going to dig into forensics. We were going to do Forensic Friday, and after everything that transpired yesterday and Friday in court, we've pushed it up to Monday. So tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, Dr. Larry Kobolinsky and Dr. Shelley Schaefer will be on with us, and we are going to talk about the forensics, the lack of, and what does both sides have as far as forensics to move forward from here? Because now you not only have experts going against each other, now you've got two medical examiners who are doctors who are very well famous, if you will, doctors in their own right, and they're fighting in court. And it's like, well, if the science is there, why can't you both conclude the same thing? So we're going to talk with Dr. Larry Kobolinsky and Dr. Shelley Schaefer tomorrow. So we hope you all will tune in. And Eric, thank you as always. And sure. Dr. Glass and Beth, we hope you come back, because I'll tell you, you have a fan base in this chat room. We had over 70 at one time, and just blogging, oh, I just love the way she is on television. And so you have your fan base. So thank you for getting the word out about the show. And thank you for having a voice for justice, because like I said in the beginning, we started this show to have a voice for Kaylee Marie when we were looking for her. And so we've continued it, and we've explored many different cases. But in the end, all we want is to have a voice for justice and make sure that justice prevails no matter which way it goes, especially in this particular case. So thank you, everyone. We're going to end tonight with a couple calls. One call, of course, is in regards to the phone call between Cindy and Casey, and we're going to play that from jail to show you her demeanor.
Okay.
Correction Center for rate call press 7. To accept this free call, press 0. To obtain a customer, this call is subject to monitoring and recording. Thank you for using Global Tel Link.
Casey? Hey, sweetie.
Well, I just saw your nice little cameo on TV.
Which one?
What do you mean, which one?
Which one? I did four different ones, and I don't know. I haven't seen them all. I've only seen one or two so far.
You don't know what my involvement is in stuff?
Casey.
Mom.
What?
No.
I don't know what your involvement is, sweetheart. You're not telling me where she's at.
Because I don't know where she's at. Are you kidding me?
Casey, don't waste your call.
No.
Scream and holler at me.
Waste my call sitting in, the jail?
Whose fault is...
Bunks are?
But whose fault is you sitting in the jail? You're blaming me that you're sitting in the jail?
Not
blame yourself
fault.
For telling lies. You mean it's not your fault? What do you mean it's not your fault, sweetheart? If you had told them the truth and not lied about everything, they wouldn't...
Do me a favor. Just tell me what Tony's number is. I don't want to talk to you right now. Forget it.
I don't have his number.
We'll get it from Lee, because I know Lee's at the house. I saw Mallory's car was out front. It was just on the news. They were just live outside the house.
I know they were.
Well...
Well?
Can you get Tony's number for me so I can call him?
Hey.
Hey, can you give me Tony's number?
I can do that. I don't know what real good it's going to do at this point.
Well, I'd like to talk to him anyway.
Okay.
Because I called to talk to my mother, and it's a waste. Oh, by the way, I don't want any of you coming up here when I have my first hearing for bond and everything else. Like, don't even waste your time coming up here.
You know, you're having a real tough, you're making it real tough for anybody who wants to try to, even if she was giving you somebody's phone number.
Every single
you're not even letting me finish. Like,
in.
Wow.
What do you make of it?
Oh, what a nasty little girl. What a nasty, nasty, nasty person. I mean, you know, here, she obviously knows that Haley is missing, or not missing. She knows that she's no longer alive. And so she's trying to cover up. So she gets very defensive. And that's what a lot of times people do that lie or know what's really going on. They tend to get very, very defensive. And that's what you're hearing here.
What about Lee's voice?
Lee is kind of interesting. They have a very interesting relationship too with regard to this. You know, he acquiesces to her. He's also kind of the peacemaker. He kind of makes things okay and kind of tries to placate her and really kind of kisses up to her. And you really see that here. I don't know what's good that's going to do you. I'm going to try to get somebody to, we want to help you. You're making it difficult. But he says it in a very soft, calming tone, which is very interesting. Maybe that's why Cindy had him go in and talk to her in the first place, because he is kind of like that peacemaker, and they have kind of this very special relationship.
Interesting.
Whatever it is.
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens this week in court. And again, thank you for being with us, Dr. Glass.
My pleasure.
We'll definitely see where we go from here, but we hope you'll join the conversation tomorrow and come back to us at Voices for Justice.
Absolutely. Love to.
Thank you so much.
Okay. My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
We're going to the show started for Voices for Justice for being a voice for Kaylee Marie. I think it broke everybody's heart when we listened to her singing and reading her book while at the assisted living of her great-grandfather. So we're going to play that soundbite right now.
I'm not hungry. Mama, Papa, the Christmas bees in my room. Yes, Papa, look at two plates. What? Eat more! I'm done. Ready.
That was on Father's Day, 3 years ago in 2008, and Kaylee was singing to her great-grandfather at his assisted living and reading her book. And Cindy was recording that, and that was something we had on her website at one point. And you can hear a very happy grandmother in the back of that camera recording her granddaughter for the last time. So I leave you with a song called All Good Gifts, and I thank you for being a voice for justice and joining us. And remember, we need to be a voice for Kaylee, because in that courtroom, that's all that matters, is that justice prevails. And happy Father's Day to everyone, and hug your children, hug your children.
It is. and soft, refreshing rain. All good gifts around us are sent from heaven above. Then thank the Lord, oh thank the Lord for all His and good, the seed time and the harvest, our life, our health, our food. No gifts have we to offer, for all thy love impart, but that which thou desirest, our humble thankful heart.
Good night, everyone.